If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
I like the theory that I heard from some people out of Dallas that said, if you clean up the trash, the rats will leave. So if you take care of the problems, the problem makers, you know, the people that cause problems, the troublemakers will leave. So
welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Bruce Ouellette is the founder, visionary, and the current owner of Bakerson. He has a proven track record of success throughout Bakerson's nearly 18 years in business, with thousands of individual units bought, repositioned, and sold. The reason that this episode is compelling is because we often hear that C-minus class assets are not worth investing in. How many of you ever heard, hey, you know, there's too much work, too much risk, too much danger, too much crime, drugs, you name it. We've been told all of the horror stories as to why we should not invest in C and C minus assets. And Bruce really has developed not only a process for dealing with them, but also just has really, I think, the makeup for someone that can take assets like this, turn them around, and not really get too worked up about it. So he breaks down not only kind of his thought process behind it, but also some of the key steps they take in order to reposition these assets that I think many of us, myself included in this, maybe I'm just speaking for myself here, but many of us, I think, say, no, there's just too much risk there. So Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's good to be here.
This is great. I'm excited to jump in today and really, same questions I ask everybody when they come on, which is, where'd you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there?
Well, I'll give the Cliff Notes version, right? So I started in 2001, I started in real estate and tax lien foreclosures with my friend Gary, who became my mentor, who's now passed on. But he was he taught me how to get properties through tax lien foreclosures. And his method was to buy the tax liens, do the foreclosure, and get the property. And I noticed a lot of people redeeming the taxes, and there were still could be good deals. So I asked Gary that, hey, what if I pursued some of these on my own with some buddies of mine? And he said, oh, that'd be great. That was in 2001, end of 2001. I was buying in the beginning of 2002. I bought some houses, three houses, a triplex and a duplex. And then I wanted to dive in full time. And the partners I had at that time were full time in the trades, and they didn't want to give up their full time job, which was fine. So I decided to pursue that on my own and ran into Jack Martin, and we became business partners in December of 2002. And I grew up in the bakery business. My dad was a baker, worked for my grandfather and then for himself. And then I worked for my dad. And Jack's dad worked for my grandfather alongside my dad in the 60s.
Oh, wow.
So that's where the name Bakerson comes from. I tell people that I'm an SOB. I'm a son of a baker. Usually get some good chuckles. So yeah, so I grew up in the bakery business, and people say, is there any connections to today's business? I said, I'm still raising dough.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I have all kinds of fun with that. But anyway, and I tell people, you know, things are heating up, you know, things are in the oven.
Oh, geez.
But we could have a whole show on that and probably put everybody to sleep.
Right.
Dad jokes, as my daughter says. So then when Jack and I got started, we bought some properties to fix and sell. And I found out I could find way more properties than we could ever fix and sell. This was 2003. And I got introduced, or 2002, December, I got introduced to a fellow by the name of Jim Staples. And he taught me wholesaling. And he was teaching Jack's brother in Seattle. And Jack was invited to go as a guest. And Jack said, Bruce, I'm not interested in that. Why don't you go hang out with my brother? Go see what their course is up to. I went up there and I got so excited because I was taught wholesaling that I shared it with Jack. And so then we were fixing and selling, like I said. And then Jack was a contractor, so he had a lot of experience in that. And we ended up flipping 40 or 50 something houses, 43 to the same buyer, either 43 or 47 to the same buyer. And it was really fun that we got into that. The first year just launched. And then we did really good with that. And our biggest year was 287 homes. And we had 30 a month was in some months was not uncommon. And the fondest memory of that life was when I had seven escrows at three different title companies, both purchase and sale, happening on the same day. And at that moment, I made a rule that I choose the title company, and that is a deal breaker. And people got upset with us, but we had such good deals, they were willing to work with us. But we picked the title company because I just couldn't, when we were moving that much product at that time, it was really, really crazy. So in the middle of there, though, there was a time where we had some really rough patch where we got we were going to go into developing. Land prices were skyrocketing. We secured a square mile of land in West Phoenix out in Peoria. We were meeting with a group that had a connection to Greg Norman, and he had developed a mock-up of what the golf course would look like on our square mile of land, and we were going to be these big developers. I had visions of riding on a cruise ship, you know, out in the ocean, or on a private ship out in the ocean with Greg Norman and golfing and all that. And I'm not a good golfer, but I thought it'd be exciting. Well, then 2007 happened. Mm-hmm. And it was humbling. It was humiliating. It was difficult. We lost a ton of investor money, lost all of our own money.
Wow.
And started all over in 2000. It took us 2 years to figure it out. We started all over in 2009. And 9, 10, 11, and 12 were the big years we had in wholesaling. In total, in our career, we've done over 2,200 transactions in real estate. And a lot of houses, as we shifted in the market, we got into multifamily, because single family, the way we did it, the little yellow notes, driving neighbors, knocking on doors, that was getting replaced by things being done on the internet. And people were buying lists. They were getting title insurance, loans, the whole bit through the internet. And we didn't adapt to that. We didn't pivot. We stayed in the boots on the ground. Then we said, hey, let's move to multifamily. Did that. Took multifamily for a couple of years. 72 unit was the largest that we wholesaled. And then we got into, said, hey, we can do this. And we got into the buy, fix, and sell. And I've done 17 properties that way, 11 in Tucson and six in Phoenix, smallest being 6 units, largest being 120. Sweet spot, 75 to 100 units is really what we have done really well. And now we're in 2021. Our goal is legacy. We're going to buy and cash flow. We're going to get away from selling. I don't enjoy selling anymore. I enjoy the cash flow. So we've got one property right now. We're pursuing that. And we have a second one in escrow. So that really quick brings you to current. And I know you probably have some questions on that, but I wanted to include also the battle scars. We've had some difficulties, and anybody that's been in real estate a long time learns from the battle scars. And we learned we're a redeveloper, not a developer. I don't want to take a raw piece of land and turn it into something, but I can take somebody else's problem and turn it into something special. I'm really good at that. And that's where my passion lies right now.
Right, right. Yeah. And that's interesting. I guess, you know, as you've tried probably both over the years, you've figured out the one that you're good at. So might as well keep doing that. I do have questions for you on the buy, fix, and sell thing, especially as it pertains to multifamily. I mean, isn't buy, fix, and sell, I mean, isn't just value add kind of the same idea? Or what's the difference?
Well, yeah, see, it is value add is what's called, but that term has changed. When I got into value add apartments 7 years ago, it was, we did, you know, the properties were borderline slum and high vacancy, big problems. You'd come in, and today they call that a heavy lift.
Right.
And I've also heard it called redevelopment play. And to us, that was value add. Buying a property and increasing rents and decreasing expenses is just doing your job. To me, that's not the value add. That's what you see out there. And if I get a value add and the number one thing is raise rents, I'm like, that's not a value add. That's just doing your job. That, in my mind, in my view of what it was 7 years ago, but with the huge push in syndications across the nation, people coming in, value add has been redefined as just adding two-tone paint, upgrading the flooring, and putting in new appliances. And I'm like, well, to me, that's kind of doing your job of running a good asset. So there's the challenge. But yeah, that's my long answer. It is value add. But for me, I really enjoy the heavy lift in the repositioning, where people drive by and like turn, like, whoa, what just happened there? Man, that thing was a dive. That thing was absolutely horrible. Now it looks kind of nice. You know, so those type of things are impactful that I like to do.
Yeah, and that's, you possess a unique skill set in the sense that most people don't want to deal with that sort of heavy lift. Like, how did you define that as this is what I'm good at? And not only am I good at it, but I enjoy it.
Well, the first property that we took down was a 64 unit apartment in Phoenix. We did it with two other partners. That one was very interesting because it was 64 one bedroom apartments. And we repositioned that. So we took some of the one bedrooms and turned them into studios and two bedrooms. So we robbed a bedroom from one. So we got done. There was 30 studios and 34, or no, 20 studios, 21 bedrooms and 24 two bedrooms.
Gotcha.
Still had 64 units, but we just moved some walls around to reposition it to get a different demographic. And I seen that being done. That was done by another group, but we were involved in that. And I thought, okay, that looks pretty interesting. But then we bought a 120 unit building, which was 34 plexes on 10 acres out in Glendale. And that one there was more management. That was mostly management issue where they had low rents and high vacancy and high turnover. And we came in and we fixed that. So that was more of an asset play than our asset manager or property management play than it was a property level. You know, needed paint, but we put on 120, we put in like, I don't know, what was 100 and something thousand in repairs, hardly anything. Most of it was parking lot and gates. So, but it was just mismanaged so horribly. Well, then the deal that my son and I, Ben, did on our own, the first deal that we did all on our own was a 22 unit apartment building that was condemned by the city of Glendale. It was in foreclosure, it was in bankruptcy, and the owner was in jail for running pornography and prostitution out of the front units. It was absolute the worst thing ever. It was condemned by the city, set for demolition in April of, was it 2012, 13? And so then we came in and we said, hey, we can do something with that. So we negotiated with the city to postpone their demolition. Then they said, hey, if you fix the front building up first and work your way back, we'll grant permits along the way. And so we negotiated along the way with them. And we were able to get that from a vacant building set for demo to a fully occupied 22 unit apartment complex. And the transformation that was just phenomenal before our eyes. So when we did something like that, and we felt the impact it had on the surrounding community, we said, you know what, this is what we want to do. So then we did a couple other buildings like that in the Sunny Slope area of Phoenix. And then when we thought that the prices or the values had peaked, or were nearing a peak, we went down to Tucson and started buying down there and did the same thing. Slumlords, some were 50, 60, 70% vacant when we bought them, and really bad. You know, the police department even asked us on one property, why'd you guys buy this property? And then, you know, some months later, they met with the property manager. We didn't meet with him personally. And they said, boy, we're so glad you guys took over this property. The 911 calls have plummeted. The safety has gone up. We really like what you did. So I like the theory that I heard from some people out of Dallas that said, if you clean up the trash, the rats will leave. So if you take care of the problems, the problem makers, you know, the people that cause problems, the troublemakers will leave. So it's become such a deep passion. Now, there's not a lot of that available right now. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at other ways to reposition, taking other asset classes and turning them into apartments. It could be offices, could be motels, hotels, warehouses, other things, but all Class C to B. No Class A to redevelopment, but all Class A and B. I'm sorry, B and C.
Right, right. Now, what skill set do you think that someone would have to possess to be able to take on such troubled assets? What do you think you have? Because I can't think of anybody, and I've interviewed a lot of people here in the last month, and I'm probably close to 75 or 80 people, and I don't think any of them have said, yeah, man, I just look for that Class C asset with real trouble on it or real trouble in it. Like, what do you have that you said, hey, this is, I mean, you got to have some strategies, some tricks up your sleeve to take something like that and actually turn it into a good asset again.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I have been asked before, and it's part of it is when you have a vision of what something can be, and then you build a team around that vision and have the team do the underwriting, share the construction, then they share our story. This is what we've done. So yes, we can do this again. And the investors and the area, you know, that have bought into that, and we've done well with it. So from that standpoint, it's very powerful in that it's the team that's behind me. I am not a bookkeeper. I'm not an accountant. I do underwriting at a very high level. You know, we buy it for X, repair it. Okay, those numbers make sense. I've got formulas in my head to do a sniff test on a property. If I say, what is your rent? Who pays utilities? Okay, that property is worth 47 a door currently and probably 65 retail. Okay, what's our play here? Can it work? So from that standpoint, that's what I do. But then the team behind me creates the really big in-depth spreadsheets, create the pro formas, plug in the numbers, talk to the lenders, get all that in place. So it's more the team than just me. That's really what gifts do I have is forming a really solid team behind me.
Right. And would you say that was a skill? I mean, out of the gate, is that something you'd kind of planned on, or did this just kind of happen over time where you add members to the team?
No, it's the same team we've had for a number of years now, but it's just by trial and error, but we had subbed everything out initially. So we were managers, and then we took everything in-house that we would run the construction, but we would call, you know, let me back up. We, in the early projects, we hired a GC to do all the work. And then we were in charge of all the materials because we'd get deep discounts on materials. And we'd negotiate the materials. Then we moved into, hey, we want to be the GC on site. We'll oversee the project, but we're going to hire our own subs. And when we did that, we've seen our margins increase. And so we're still a management staff. We don't have any construction people on staff. Everybody's management. So all the staff, all the contractors are all hired, licensed, bonded, insured contractors. Everything from, you know, plumbers to carpenters to electricians. But that evolved to the team we have now. And the people we have actually came to me in various situations looking for an opportunity, and we were able to make it work. So it's been good.
Right. No, that's great. Do you see more upside in because you're taking a distressed asset? Like, is there more, the phrase meat on the bone, is there more meat on the bone in this scenario than there would be, say, from a B to A or, you know, maybe nicer asset classes?
Yeah, there is. There's more meat on the bone, but there's also more perceived risk. More things can go wrong. One of the things that'll kill your deal is time. You know, people talk about, hey, if we get in and out and do this deal in this much time, it works really good. But when you're buying an asset that has almost no rent coming in, it's very high risk. The LLC and everything is set up brand new. You're not going to get good financing. You're going to pay anywhere from we've paid as high as 12% interest on the money to buy it, just because the margins are so wide, they would still cash flow at 10 or 12%.
Wow.
You know, temporarily. But then long-term, you can't do that because eventually it's going to eat that up, especially when you start having, you know, CapEx things that need to be done down the road. So you can only do that for a 12 to 24 month period of higher interest private money. And then you roll that into a bank loan, Fannie, Freddie, or other bank. So the biggest thing to watch for in this is that time is the shorter you can shorten your cycle, the more money you can make. So that's some of the things to watch out for.
What's like the first three things you do when, you know, say it's closing day, you closed, you bought a distressed asset. What's some of the very first things you do?
Put the residents on notice that there's a new owner, new property manager in town. And we go through the, we audit, you know, before, during escrow, we audit the leases and all that. The next thing you do is secure, like if it's a really troubled asset with vacant units, secure the units and make sure that they look decent from the outside. You know, there's no broken windows or city code violations. City code violations were the first thing we attack after we visit the residents, is to make sure that the abandoned cars are gone, weeds are trimmed, or weeds are gone, trees are trimmed. And we try to, as fast as we can, have it outwardly meet the minimum requirements for crime-free multi-housing for the state of Arizona, is where we're located. So if we meet the crime-free housing basic requirements, we've made big headway in that property. It has to do with lighting and vegetation and ingress and egress and secure units and things like that. So that's the very first steps. I guess I gave three there, but.
Right. No, those are great. And what is this crime-free rating? What does that do for you as an owner?
It gets you, like in Tucson, it gets you a direct contact with a police officer. So if you have an issue at your property, instead of calling 911 and waiting for them to respond, you call your community action department. And the community action officers, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, are available and on call. And you form a relationship with them, and they are able to respond quicker. And you can also do, for probable cause and for problems, you can do evictions faster, you can secure units faster. There's a lot of things you can do if you follow the crime-free multi-housing, because they have to sign the addendum as well as residents, that they know that they can be evicted for cause. But the biggest thing, having that contact. In Tucson, there's civilians who are community action officers. And in Phoenix, Glendale and Scottsdale, they are police officers who are community action officers.
Right. That's interesting. One last question before we jump here into the final four, just because the oddness of 2020. How did this particular asset class fare for you in 2020?
It actually did really well. Our collections went up. I know that the stimulus and the rent credits and those helped them. You know, we were able to apply for some of that as well through the state of Arizona. It wasn't much, but there was a little bit of money that came from a grant that went to landlords who treated their residents right. So we were able to get some cash there too. But overall, the income was up. The occupancy is up. We're at over 90%. And payments are still doing really well. Our economic vacancies are low. So we've fared really well. And I give credit to our third-party property management company. They've done really well on collections.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. Bruce, if jumping in here in the final four, if you were to distill everything you know down to one piece of advice and you're giving it to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Listen to those that have gone before.
Right. I love that. When it comes to investing in yourself, what's one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
I read a lot. I'm averaging for the last few months a book a week. And my goal is to do 52 books in 52 weeks. And I've done 10 books in 9 weeks.
Wow. That's impressive. That's impressive. We'd love to see your reading list there when you're done with it, because I'm sure you're going to uncover some good stuff to read. When it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
Very involved with our church community and our family. Do a lot with our family and our direct neighborhoods that we have impact with on our apartments as well.
Gotcha. And Bruce, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
They can email me, Bruce@Bakerson, B-A-K-E-R-S-O-N, Bruce@Bakerson.com. Or they can call me on my cell, 520-808-9111.
That's awesome. Bruce, thanks so much for your time. Certainly appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's really been fun.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.